this morning. We've got a couple of verses I want to particularly look at. The first is verse 16, the second is verse 17. Let's just read them out together, and then I'll just get stuck in. I've only got the one point. For by him, this is Jesus, by him all things were created, in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things were created through him and for him. And he is before all things. And in him all things hold together. Oh, dear me. Anybody jealous of me standing up here to be able to speak about this morning? The whole world just keeps going, doesn't it? Morning by morning, day after day, the sun comes up, the birds sing, everything just carries on, and it doesn't seem to matter what happens here on the face of the earth. Just, it has this kind of regular motion, doesn't it? It just keeps going, the planets keep swirling around in their orbits, and the seasons come and go. The snow and the sun, children are born, old folk grow wise and get grey hair. Just carries on, doesn't it? Keeps going on year after year after year after year. And the thing that I find so astonishing about this fact, when I'm caused to think about it, and the truth is you can't think about these things or don't tend to think about these things spontaneously, it's a provoked thought, provoked by what one reads, is that this is quite astonishing that the world continues as it does. And I'll tell you for why. Because if you look in Genesis and chapter 3, I mean, I think most of us know it so well, which records the words of warning that God, sorry, chapter 2, the words of warning that God gave to Adam. And verse 17 of chapter 2, this is to Adam, God said, of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die. And yet, Adam ate, didn't he? Did he eat? And did he continue to live? And did he have sons and daughters, and did they have sons and daughters, and did the birds of the field have their sons and daughters and their fledglings and chicks? Did the deer of the field, did they continue to flourish? Did the trees keep bearing fruit and seed? Did the sun keep coming up day after day? So God said, in that day you shall surely die. That day came, and death came, but not as we might have thought it would come. You'd think, wouldn't you, that at that moment everything would have just stopped and imploded into one great non-radiating black hole. But it didn't. We're here. And it's beautiful. Isn't it? Isn't it wonderful? What a gracious God. What a gracious God we serve. Now, I know in our philosophical moments, and especially in the midst of suffering, and when we observe human suffering, which is real and visceral, in those moments people wonder, and always have wondered, if there is a God, if there is a God, why would he allow this to happen? Why would he make a world where there would be genocide in the millions of people? Why would he make a world where cancer spreads through people young and old? Why would he make a world where human beings traffic one another for profit, even children? Why would he make a world where heroin is grown and manufactured and sold and infects our society? Why did he make a world where there is evil? Why did he do it? And despite all of those things, the sun comes up. Is a sunset beautiful? It is. And the rain clouds, and the laughter of a little child. The world is full of beauty and wonder. Beauty and wonder. And so why? Why is the world still here? Why is the world still going in the face of human rebellion and the clear, distinct word of God, you shall surely die? Why are we still here? Is it because of all the good things that people do? People do good things, have you noticed? People do love each other. People are kind to one another. People are courteous. They remember each other. They're thoughtful towards one another. Lieutenant Colonel Armand Bertrand. There are good things happening on the face of the earth and good people. Is that why the world continues, so that good people get their opportunity to do good things? There is so much good. There's love, and there's wit, and there's courage, and all those things. Now our passage, let's come back to Colossians. Our passage in chapter 1 and verses 16 and 17 tell us why the world is here, why it continues to this very hour, and will continue as long as it pleases the one who we read about. Why is the world here? We are told absolutely and categorically here in this passage why the world is here and why it remains. Because, going back one verse to verse 15, because he, this person who is being referred to in this text, because of him, that's why you're here. That's why the sun shines. That's why the world continues, because of him that is the image of the invisible God that we talked about a couple of weeks ago. The image of the invisible God, the firstborn of creation. Him, this person, is the reason you're here today. So, who is this person? Who's being referred to here? Is this a general reference to he, as in God? No. Very specifically, very categorically, the person that's been spoken about here, who is the image of the invisible God? It's Jesus Christ. It's because of Jesus Christ that the world is here. It's because of Jesus Christ that there's food and water and opportunity for rest and refreshment. The reason the world keeps going, the reason we still keep going round the sun, this passage tells us it's because of Jesus Christ. He, that is Jesus Christ, the man, the person, Jesus Christ, we read in verse 16, by him, Jesus Christ, all things were created by Jesus Christ. All things were created by Jesus Christ. And as we go on, not only did he create everything, the person Jesus Christ, it was created, verse 16, as well as we can continue on towards the end, it was created for Jesus Christ. It was created by him, and it was created for him. He made it for himself. He made it for himself. He made all things. Have you got any things? Is there any things? He made them. Stop and think about that. He made them. And he made them for himself. Did you get it? You thought about that? All the stuff is his stuff. He holds it all together. We go on to verse 17. The reason he didn't just make it all for himself, but the reason it still hangs together as it does, all the atoms hold together, the reason we don't go spinning off into orbit, the reason there is order, is because he, Jesus Christ, is continuing to hold it all together. All right? He's doing it. Jesus is doing it. Aren't you glad it's him? I can't think of anybody better, more glorious than Jesus. Now, let's step back from this for a moment, because this is a remarkable statement to be making. I mean, we perhaps get more naturally comfortable with the idea, as people who believe in God, that God made everything. Yeah? God made everything and sustains it all. Mysterious and wonderful providence that just keeps everything working together and ordered all things according to his good pleasure. And that he holds it all together even to this day and provides for all that he has made. And part of the reason we believe that is because, well, we read about that, don't we, in the Bible. And I think people throughout the world, even those who haven't read the Bible, have looked and wondered at the world and have concluded that something or someone infinitely great of infinite wisdom and power has brought all this into being, and they owe some kind of love or allegiance or worship to this unknown one. God, we perhaps are more comfortable with the idea, is the one who has made all these things for his glory, and he takes pleasure in all that he has made, and everything exists for his purpose and for his plan. And yet Paul here maintains that Jesus, as the image of the invisible God, so we believe God to do these things, so we see Jesus doing these things too. So if we go back to our analogy we made a couple of weeks ago, you can't look at the sun without blinding yourself. You can't look at God without killing yourself. But you can look at a picture of the sun, and you can look at an image of God in the person of Jesus. So if God makes all things and holds it together, don't be surprised to find that Jesus is doing it too. You can see Jesus doing it. I think that's the logical steps that he's taking. If you believe that the Father did it, then Paul is saying you must see that the Son has done it and is doing it too, because he is the image, the representation of the invisible God. So Jesus creates and sustains all things for himself. That's what we've just been reading about. Right. In light of all that, you'd sort of expect that if you dug around, I remember when I was a kid, I used to look around and, like, I used to find things. It's when things started to come from Taiwan. Do you remember when we started to get loads and loads of products come over from Taiwan? And on the back it said, made in Taiwan. And then there's stuff made in Japan and things. We'd have these influxes, made in China, these influxes of imports that came through. In light of everything we've read here, you'd expect that somewhere, if you looked close enough, maybe deep down embedded as a tattoo on the DNA of everything, you'd found made in Nazareth. That everything, this, that, you, me, everything would have his fingerprint on it, his signature on it, an assertion of his creative and intellectual right, that this is his intellectual property. Made in Nazareth, made by Jesus. But here's the question. Here is the question. How does Jesus do it? Okay? Is that a question anybody else apart from me was thinking? How does Jesus, you know, sandals, Bethlehem, Nazareth, Galilee, Jerusalem, glory. How, in the space of all that, does Jesus Christ make the world and sustain it? How does he do it? If this is a question only I'm asking, I'll stop now. Is anybody else at least curious at this point to press on a little bit further? How does he do it? You know, because the assertion here is that Jesus Christ, the man that is God, did this and is doing this even now. All things. It's quite a remarkable statement, isn't it, in verse 16? All things, everything you can see. And I don't believe for a minute that he's just saying with the optic nerves. He's talking about sight as in terms of anything you can perceive with your mind or think about or understand. And also, I mean, don't we have to admit, one and all, that we know far less than we don't know? Don't you seem to find out that the more we seem to discover, the less we appear to know? But all that stuff we don't know, all the invisible stuff, all the heavenly stuff, all the angelic stuff, all that stuff, Jesus made all of that, we're told. Everything above us in heaven. I don't know, we can't go too high or low. I'm not going to spin people out. Right? And all the stuff on earth, we know practically nothing about what's even happening at the bottom of our seas. We know more about outer space than we know what's underneath our feet down at the ground. He made all of that, Paul is saying. Everything. And as he goes on to think about the invisible things, notice that the thrones and powers and authorities, dominions, rulers, authorities, follows on from his word invisible. And by that, I read this as being, it's not that you can't see a throne, because of course you can see a throne, it's a thing, isn't it? You can see a dignitary in his finery, or her finery, fine, it's not that. The point is that all the structures of society, of human society, the structures in the animal kingdom, the reason a lion has a certain domain and after a certain point that's another lion's domain, the pecking order, all these things, everything, you take it, all the structures, the angelic structures we don't see or perceive, all that, Jesus is responsible for it all. The whole created order, the order proceeds from Jesus too, from Jesus Christ. So how does he do it? How does he do it? When does he do it? How does he do all that and do it now? How is he doing what we perceive now? How come we're all hanging together right now? And everything is hanging together right now. How is Jesus Christ doing that? Do you know? In verse 17, I think the natural inclination is to go to verse 17 and do the following. In verse 17 it says, and he is before all things. He is before all things, and in him all holds together. Now, surely being before all things is a reference to the fact that Jesus is not just another man. Yes? It must refer in some way, shape, or form that this is God, that Jesus Christ is God in the flesh, come amongst us, the incarnation. And of course, it is necessary for us to understand who Jesus is, that he is God as well as man, for us to even begin to believe that he could have made everything and hold it all together. Because only God surely has the power and the wisdom to do all these things. So surely it's important for us to understand that though he came in history as a man, he abides forever as the divine Second person of the Trinity, God the Son, and continues as the God-man in heaven now. Surely that power is necessary for there to be this creation. But I don't believe, in fact, that this verse is really making its main point about Jesus' pre-existence as God the Son and prior to his coming as Jesus Christ, making everything, whizzing around like Superman, going around creating everything, this man going around. I don't believe that's what we're being shown. Before all things, here, first and foremostly, refers to what we read in verse 18, which we didn't cover. And it's there at the end of verse 18. It's a reference, another way of expressing Jesus' preeminence. He's before all things because he is greater than all things. He is greater than the creation. Jesus Christ is greater than the whole world and everything in it. That's what Paul is saying. And of course, to make all things, one would have to be greater than all things. An artist is greater than a painting. And so Jesus is greater than the whole creation which he has made. The emphasis on these verses here that Paul uses to speak and teach the Colossians is emphasizing this, that it's Jesus Christ, the incarnate God, that makes all things and holds them all together. The man God does this. We still have this question hanging over us. That's how somehow in his incarnation, as coming as a man, how does he make the world and hold it all together? Because here's the obvious thing. How can you make a world that existed before you were born? Because we're reading that Jesus Christ did it, and yet the world was here before Jesus Christ came into the world. I mean, I've had a tough time this week getting my head around this. Are you all right out there? Are you following me? But that is the challenge that's before us. There's no record in the 30 years of Jesus walking on the face of the earth of him creating everything. Is there? Or holding it all together in that sense. There isn't any record of that. Even in the book of Revelations where we see Jesus in heaven, we don't see him retrospectively creating everything and then it all coming to being before he existed. Or we don't really see that being taught or shown. So let me take you back, if you will, to what we said a couple of weeks ago when we looked at Jesus, the image of the invisible God. And I said to you that we had to have the absolute highest possible view of the person of Jesus. He is the image of the invisible God. And if you remember, I tried to show and teach how it is that he's the image of the invisible God. He's not the image of the invisible God because he wears sandals and a beard, and therefore God has sandals and a beard. That's not the point, is it? It's not how he looks that makes him the image. It's what he does that makes him the image. It's how he does it that makes him the image. And ultimately, gloriously, what he does on the cross. Because on the cross, Jesus shows you, manifests the mercy, the love, and the grace of God in a way that you cannot see anywhere else in the whole of creation. It is the epitome, the zenith, the high point, the brightest spot in the whole of creation. If you want to see the love of God, see Christ crucified. Go to Calvary and see him there. That's where you'll see it. That's the brightest spot in all of creation if you want to see God. You want to see God. Because if you try to look at him directly in yourself, you will die. But if you will look at Jesus you will live, and not just live, you will live forever. And God has done great things, hasn't he? He's done great things. The whole cosmos speaks of God's glory, doesn't it? The whole earth, the stars, everything speaks of God. The judgments and decrees, the things that happen in the world, they speak of God. But nothing manifests God more perfectly than Christ crucified. You want to know God? Look there. You want to see the love of God, the power of God, the wisdom of God? Look there. Verse 14, going back a bit, because I'm just rehearsing some of the wonders of this person, Jesus, again, because I've just been run over with it. Verse 14, because there on the cross, we have redemption, don't we? That's how our redemption was born. Bought, we are absolutely sunk in our sin, irrecoverable in our sin. We ate the fruit, and we should, by all rights, die. But God was prepared to stay, that stay of execution, because Jesus said he would come to redeem us and bring us back, that we might know forgiveness of the most heinous act that has brought into being every tear that's ever been shed, every drop of blood that ever has been spilled, every moral injustice that's happened on the face of the earth. Jesus said, I will go and I will take the penalty for their sin upon myself. So God stayed that execution so we might have the opportunity to hear of what he has done and respond in repentance and faith and be restored to God. We have redemption and forgiveness of sin through Christ crucified, don't we? So if we want to find how Jesus Christ creates everything and sustains everything, I want to say to you, you have to go to the same place. You have to go to Calvary. You want to see how Jesus makes the universe and everything in it and holds it all together? You have to go to the cross. Because that is the spot. That's the place, isn't it? How do you do it? I'm wanting to demonstrate and show that the cross does more than provide for your personal forgiveness and personal redemption. I want to show you that the cross does more than provide forgiveness for all the elect, all God's people down through the ages, and redemption for the church. I want to show you the multifaceted glory of the cross and what Christ has done there. Jesus redeems there, Jesus forgives there, but I'm saying that Jesus creates there and sustains there too by the cross. And I want to do this because Easter's on our doorstep. And we're thinking about the cross and the resurrection and all these sort of things. And my prayer, my desire, is your hearts would literally burst with thankfulness and praise. And look around the world and all that he's done in wonder and thanksgiving. That you would be a thankful, praiseful, prayerful, joyful people. But when you meditate upon the cross, and I believe that the Spirit, the Holy Spirit, wants us to see how great Christ crucified is. He redeems us, thank the Lord. And in that we see the Father. But there's more. There's more that Jesus does upon the cross. Now, I've got my last page here. How are you doing? Maybe you think, oh, Ben's got rather excited this morning. And it's true. It's true. All my structure's gone out the window. Let's go back to the reality of sin and suffering again. The evil that persists on the face of the earth. Now, before everything was made, before everything that is was, before there was even time, there was God. And God made choices. He determined what he was going to do. And he decided to make the world and everything in it. Do you agree? And to make this world, this specific world, the way this world is. And God being God, before everything was made, do you think God knew that there were going to be tears? He knows all things. Otherwise, he's not God. Did he know there was going to be real pain? He did. He's God, and he knows all things. Did he know that the wicked would flourish? He did. He foresaw these things. Did he know there would be viciousness in the hearts of men? Did he see the orca, you know, the killer whale, coming up on the beach and catching hold of the seal pups, those lovely soft seal pups? And instead of just crushing it in its powerful jaws and putting an end to its life, it plays with it in the surf and tosses it up in the air for minutes and tens of minutes and half an hour and more, causing intense suffering to its victim. Did he see these things? He did. He knows all things. And yet he still, seeing Adam taking that piece of fruit and putting his great big chops around it and biting into it through its skin, he saw this and everything that would happen as a result. He saw it all and still pressed the go button and said, let's make this world. But despite the necessity of evil, evil is necessary so that we might be free and have choice. And despite the inevitability of sin, that Adam would bite into that fruit, despite all of those things, he did it. God did it. Why? Why? Because Jesus before then, God the Son before then, said, not my will, but yours be done, and was prepared to come into this fallen and broken world and to suffer in it and die in it. And say on his knees as he prayed in the garden, not my will, but yours be done. And if he hadn't been willing to come and redeem and forgive, God would have never made this world. It would have never even got off the planning stage. And he certainly wouldn't keep it going as he does. It's all because the Son promised to come and live amongst us and suffer and die and be nailed by us on that tree and take the penalty of our sin upon himself, that the world even exists. He created all things. And nothing was done without him. And it's for him. And is held together by him. and the power. This is the power of the cross. He comes and he binds himself to the creation. He takes upon flesh. He becomes part of it all. He invests himself into it, in its fallen state, and suffers to redeem it. And only then could the world be made. Only then could it be sustained. Christ crucified makes the sun come up in the morning. Christ crucified puts the crunch in bread. Christ crucified makes the swallows do that fantastic dance they do up in the sky. Christ crucified makes the clouds look like elephants sometimes. Christ crucified is that warm hug from a friend or a family member. It's the dimples in a baby's cheek. Everything. Nothing would be here if it wasn't for him. And I'm saying this to you because if there's something good, if there's something lovely, if there's something noble, something right, something pleasing, something sweet, think about it and you'll find underneath somewhere in the DNA of it, made in Nazareth. And I want you to be able to thank God for Jesus and him crucified, not just because he saved you from your sin, and that is wonderful, but because of all that he has done. When you walk down the street and you see something that strikes your heart, thank God for Jesus. Thank God for Jesus. Verse 17, he is before all things, and in him all things hold together. You see stuff holding together. We're so frail. We're so broken. We're so fallen. People in government and rulers and civil servants and authorities, in our families, as parents, as children. We're so frail. We're so frail. Why does it all hold together? Why is it all holding together? It's Jesus. It's him. To him be glory and praise and majesty and power and authority and dominion, world without end. World without end. Willing to stand and sing? The Spirit helping? Our last hymn this morning. The higher throne than all this world has known, where faithful ones from every tongue will one day come before the Son, will stand, made faultless through the Lamb, believing heart, finding promised grace. Salvation comes as does our